Hello and welcome to this AAT podcast on effective negotiation. My name is Tracy Sinclair and I'm a corporate executive coach and management development trainer. I have been working with the AAT staff, branch network and members for the last 13 years. During this recording, there may be an opportunity for you to complete an exercise for yourself, or to take a little time for thinking. Therefore, please feel free to pause the recording at any relevant point for this purpose. During the course of this recording, we will cover the following areas. We will be looking at some of the basics behind effective negotiation. We will look at five strategies of influence that sit around negotiation. We will also cover three different approaches and the four phases of negotiation. And finally, we will look at the concept of commodities and beliefs. So let's start with the basics. Essentially, effective negotiation is about positively influencing another person so that you achieve an outcome that is hopefully mutually beneficial to both of you. So let's think, what positively influences you about others? Think of a person that has a positive effect on you or someone who you admire. It may be someone from the present or the past. It may be someone you know, or indeed a public figure. As you think about that person, think about what it is that they do or say that means they have that positive effect on you. What are the qualities or things about them that you like and draws you to them? Of those things, list the top three. We all need to influence many different people during our personal and working lives. It is important to think about the most appropriate way to influence in each case. This means giving consideration to the situation and the person you are trying to influence, rather than always relying on your most comfortable style or approach. A good influencer and a good negotiator will be flexible in their approach. Having asked you to think about the qualities of someone who positively influences you, let me share with you some of the qualities that we generally like to be displayed by people we deal with. Here are some of them. Good active listening skills. A good sense of humour. A strong sense of commitment and values. Approachability and flexibility. Being assertive and forthright. Showing care and consideration for others. Being fair and objective. Friendly and polite. Clear and articulate. Well prepared and organized. Honest and open. Well informed and showing confidence. And positive and enthusiastic. Of much research that has been undertaken in this area, this list is very typical of the qualities that we like to be shown to ourselves. These are the qualities that we like others to display when we are dealing with them. So if these are the qualities that we are looking for in others, it makes sense to think that these are also qualities that others are looking for in us. How does this list compare, I wonder, to the qualities that you chose from the person that you were drawn to? And when you look at that list, which of those qualities do you already have as natural and strong qualities within your personality and your behaviour? And which of those qualities are ones that you could perhaps develop and improve upon? Interestingly, there is one particular quality that stands out over and above all of the rest. And that is the skill of good, active listening. It is very difficult to influence or effectively negotiate with another individual if you are not able to actively and effectively listen to what they have to say and what they would like. So let's consider, what are good listening skills? To begin with, a helpful question can be to ask ourselves, what are the barriers to listening? When we are negotiating with someone else, what could impede us from listening effectively? It could be something around us being focused only on what we want, perhaps. Is it also focused, perhaps, on the fact that we may not be prepared to offer up something and contribute to what the other person wants? All of those inner thoughts and the inner conversations that we are having with ourselves can impede us from listening effectively to what is actually going on. So how can we show that we are really listening, both non-verbally and verbally? Here is a reminder of some of the key skills here. From a non-verbal perspective, we can show that we are listening through our body posture and our gestures. It is important to maintain an open and relaxed body posture, using subtle gestures to support our understanding of what the other person is saying. Remember, however, to try and match your actions with the tone of the conversation in order to achieve empathy. Facial expressions too. Smiling and nodding can be very encouraging to the speaker, as can other expressions to match the tone and the content of the other person's words. And then there's eye contact. Maintaining eye contact is a good way to show that you are listening and interested in the other person. Eye contact should be regular, however not fixed in a stare. How can we show that we are listening from a verbal perspective? Think carefully about the words that you choose when responding. It can be useful to try and mirror and match the other person's words by picking out certain pieces of vocabulary and using them back with the other person. Try to maintain also an even tone and volume, and acknowledge the other person's feelings with your words. Pausing is very important too. If you are speaking, you can't listen. So allow enough pauses to let the other person speak and for you to digest what they have said. Clarification. Ask questions to clarify points, obtain more information, or probe deeper. Summarizing and paraphrasing. This not only reassures the other person that you have been listening, but also helps you to be sure that you have understood and captured the key points. Let's now look at five distinct strategies for influencing. If you imagine a horizontal line or a continuum with five strategies sitting across that continuum. On the far left-hand side, we have two strategies. One is called tell, and the next one is called sell. These strategies, telling and selling, are called push strategies because they are solution-based and solution-focused. With telling and selling, it implies that we already have the solution in mind and we are wanting to push that solution onto the other person by either telling them what to do or selling it to them. On the far right-hand side of this range or this spectrum, we have another two strategies. On the far right, we have a strategy that is called facilitation. And next to that, we have joint problem solving. Unlike telling and selling, these two strategies of facilitation and joint problem solving are pull strategies, pull styles, because they are problem-based and problem-focused. In essence, they are saying, we have a problem, we have an issue or a challenge or a goal, and I will work with you to either facilitate or joint problem solve so that we come up with the solution together. Interestingly, sitting right in the middle between both of these styles is negotiation. Negotiation is the flexible balance between pushing and pulling. So what is interesting here is for us to think when we are negotiating, which are the elements of this deal or this arrangement that I want to push on, and which are the ones that I am prepared to pull more and work with, in a collaborative sense, the other person. Too much pushing, and we're really not negotiating at all. We're just trying to sell a concept or tell someone what to do. Too much pulling, and we may find that we don't actually have our needs met at all, because the other person designs the solution. There are many grey areas between these different strategies, and so they are best to be thought of as points on a continuum. The strategy you choose will depend, amongst other things, upon your own preferred style, the other person and their style, the urgency of the situation and how much time you have available, the need for commitment versus the need or the desire for compliance, the amount of control you want or need to have over the outcome, and your organisational culture. So before we actually think about effective negotiation skills, it's also useful to consider, is negotiation actually the right strategy here? Or should I be telling or selling, or moving across to the other side of the continuum and joint problem solving or facilitating? If negotiation is required and is appropriate, then we can start to think about, what is the balance between how much I need to push and how much I need to pull in order to get an effective result, both for me and the other person in this conversation. In order to help you decide those two things, one being which strategy to use, and secondly, how to use that strategy, it could be useful to think about the five strategies we've mentioned and consider in each case, what are the positive aspects of that strategy in this situation that I am considering? What are the negative aspects of that strategy for this situation? What situations are most appropriate for the use of each individual style? And what would be the situations when that style was very inappropriate? And if I am going to use that style, and in this case the style being negotiation, what type of behaviour would I be displaying? What type of speech might I be using? What language and words will I be using? And what might I be expecting the other person to be doing or saying? Once we have concluded that negotiation is the right strategy to use, we can then start to consider a behavioural approach to negotiating to produce good results and nurture relationships as well. To introduce this idea, I'd like to use the analogy of colours. And in this instance, the colours are red, blue, and purple. If we are going to negotiate with a red style, this means that we will be displaying certain qualities and certain behaviours and characteristics that probably lean more towards the telling and selling, the push styles. If we are operating from a blue perspective, then we are more likely to be displaying the behaviours and the qualities that are more across to the right-hand side of the influencing spectrum, which would appear to be more like joint problem solving or facilitation. Purple behaviours, however, are those ones that typically sit between the two, because when we blend the colours of red and blue together, we get various shades of purple. Purple being the most effective colour for negotiation. We'll look in a moment at some of those characteristics and qualities in a little bit more detail. Regardless of which one we choose, red, blue, or purple, there are four phases that we will go through in any negotiation process. Those four phases are those of prepare, debate, propose, and bargain. In the prepare phase, we are thinking about what we want. In the debate phase, we are finding out what they want. In the propose phase, we are both focusing on what wants could we trade between each other. And in the bargain phase, we are finalising the process by considering what wants we will trade, which ones we are prepared to exchange in order to move to a mutually acceptable outcome. How we approach each of these phases of prepare, debate, propose, and bargain will vary greatly depending upon whether we are coming from a blue, purple, or red stance. So let's understand a little bit more about these red or blue stances. Typically, if we are going to negotiate with someone coming from a red stance, here are some examples of typical attitudes or thoughts or beliefs and values that we might hold. The red negotiator is competitive and will typically see the other party as an opponent. Therefore, the red negotiator can be quite aggressively competitive. They may want to dominate their opponent, believing that their objective is to win. A basic red assumption is, in a successful negotiation, both parties gain, but one gains more than the other. The red negotiator will be very concerned with results. They will believe that all deals are one-offs. The red negotiator will often try to take something for nothing or for less than they give so that they feel that they've got a good deal. The red negotiator may even use ploys and tricks. They may bluff or coerce, and in extreme cases, may even try to exploit the more submissive blue negotiator. And now for the blue negotiator characteristics and qualities. The blue negotiator views the other party as a partner. Their stance is more likely to be cooperative, even with an aggressive partner. The blue negotiator will probably show respect to all partners. They will seek to succeed, and they may hold the belief that all deals lead to others. They will want to be open and play it straight. So let's think for a moment about the red and the blue approach. What could be the benefits of taking a red approach? And what could be the drawbacks or the risks associated with a red approach? What do you think the benefits are of the blue approach? And by comparison, the drawbacks and the risks of that blue approach. In considering and weighing up these benefits and drawbacks or risks, when do you think each of those stances would be appropriate or not appropriate? So let's move on to think about the purple behaviour. The purple negotiator. The red-blue game leaves very little room for ambiguity. However, the absence of this ambiguity can be a rather restrictive benefit in a negotiation-type conversation. Negotiating is not an instinctive, fully formed and operational concept by the time of your first negotiation. You learn to negotiate like you learn to speak your native language, through repetitive trial and error and in reaction to the success or otherwise at your attempts at communicating with other people. You do not learn to negotiate on your own any more than you learn to speak on your own. Negotiating is a social activity, and you learn in contact with others. So what is purple behaviour? Put at its simplest, purple behaviour insists on linking what we want, i.e. our red side, with what somebody else wants, our blue side. To produce a purple offer to exchange the one with the other. In essence, it says, you will get something from me and I will get something from you. In order for us to give and exchange that something between us, we need to think about a concept called tradable commodities. Within the context of the negotiations that you do or that you might have to do, what are the tradable commodities that you have? Which ones are you prepared to trade? And to what extent are you prepared to trade them? What value do you perceive those commodities to have in the other person's eyes compared to in your eyes? Similarly, what do you perceive to be the tradable commodities of the other person? Which of those commodities do you want them to trade with you? And what value do you place upon them? What value do you think they place upon them? And how does the value that you perceive their commodities to have compare with the value of your own commodities? Does it look as though there could be the room for a fair exchange? Finally, let's think about the beliefs associated with each of these negotiating styles. If you are going to be a red negotiator, what do you think your beliefs are? What are the thoughts that go in your head? The values, the perspectives, the opinions and decisions and conclusions. If you are a blue negotiator, what might those beliefs, values, conclusions or decisions be? And now as we move on to consider the slightly more sophisticated approach of being a purple negotiator, here again, what would the beliefs, perspectives, values and conclusions be here? Now think about yourself. Which style do you most identify with? Red, blue, or purple? And whatever that approach is, what are your beliefs when it comes to a negotiation situation? Take a moment to think about that thought. What are your perspectives and values and beliefs around the negotiation? And when you've considered them and perhaps even written them down, it might be useful to look at that list and think about which of those beliefs or thoughts are helpful to you when negotiating. Which of those thoughts add value and help move you towards a good outcome? On the other hand, looking at that list, which of those beliefs could tend to limit you or keep you from negotiating more effectively and hold you back from a successful outcome? Also now consider the benefits of the beliefs that you hold. What are the benefits of you perhaps making a shift in your beliefs around negotiating to you? How could you be at more of an advantage by making an adjustment to the way you think and how you approach negotiation? What could be the benefits of making such a shift to your business or your organisation? And last but not least, what could be the benefits in making a shift or an adjustment in your thinking to the client or the other person who you are negotiating with? So let's pull some of this together. Have a think about some of these questions in the context of you developing your skills now and taking your negotiation effectiveness to the next level. What will you do the same? And what will you do differently? When thinking about what you will do differently, consider the following questions. What will you be saying? What will you actually be doing? What would I be seeing if I were watching you? And what will you be hearing? How will you be feeling? And what will you be thinking? When considering the things that you might do differently, take a moment also to consider what would stop you from doing those things now. And as you consider that, and the benefits associated with making those shifts to you, your organisation, and the people that you negotiate with, I invite you to take a few moments to think about what you want to do now to improve your negotiation skills. This concludes the podcast on effective negotiation. I do hope you found this useful, and thank you very much for listening.